This week on RSVMB Update, Saren makes her and the elves presence known in Yak to the Light. She also confronts Zaros at Battle of the Monolith, and we delve into the Week 2 Battle Report. Elite dungeon abusers are unbanned with no wealth removal, and we share our thoughts. This is RSVMB Update, episode 232, recorded Thursday, June 3rd, 2021. Echoes of Erebus. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSVMB Update. This week, we have a new Yak track. We have the second week of the Battle of the Monolith, and Tanis and I are here. We're going to strap in, and we're going to have a fun time with this, aren't we? Or at least to the best of our abilities.
You know, we're gonna do something with it. Get a little something going on. Yak tracks are always fun.
Yeah.
Or
yeah,
most of the time, right?
Yo, I 100% agree they are, and I actually needed this one, honestly. This one couldn't have come at a better time. It really couldn't have. I do have to say that much, but if you're joining us for the first time, full show notes can be found at update.rsbnb.com. I am Shane12088, and he is Tanis79 in-game. You can chat with us there at Friends Chat, Bits Bytes, or join our Discord at rsbnb.com/Discord. And as we mentioned, the next Yak track, Yak to the Light, the sequel to Yak to the Shadows, is here. And, you know, just having a look at everything that's on offer with this one, I really do enjoy what we have with this in terms of the way the cosmetics and everything look.
Well, I'm a big fan of Saren, and I'm really motivated to do this Yak track because I want these. I actually want these outfits.
Yeah, there's no ghillie suit, but, I mean, we do have...
there's only one. I mean,
there's only one ghillie suit.
There's only one.
Now, you're of course talking about the Tardiet armor. But
yes.
Lots of things here from various elf clans on offer. Did you notice that there's the buck stag pet?
Oh yeah, yeah. That's definitely
thought of you when I had that one, because that goes right in line with your outfit that you have.
Uh-huh.
So yeah. I imagined you would be interested in that one. So I had that in mind for you. There's also an owl as well, a nice Saren-themed owl. I think the only thing I have to complain about that one is that, you know, we already have those god owls in-game, and mm-hmm. this one is just so much higher fidelity than those, that anybody who wants an owl follower, you're going to want this one. No questions asked compared to what we had in the past.
Yeah, you know, but I mean, I guess if you want a retro owl, you could always go get the old owl pet, but if you want a, you know, a good look, I mean, we've had plenty of improved birds. Look, we got the lava like hawk and stuff like that. Didn't make the like raven obsolete or something, or the, you know, or maybe it did.
And that's the best thing about RS is that, you know, you can take it whichever way you want it, whether it be if you want the retro look or the modern look, it's all there. So, as per usual, 50 tasks. If you got up to task 40 on the last one, you get the first 10 tasks completed to 50%. Starting off, you have a Yak story one, as you normally do. You get to go and talk in Berthorp to Angoth to complete that one. Then we move into woodcutting and firemaking, and our second cosmetic item. The first one is the Saren Crystal cosmetic override. Second is the Saren Crystal sword, which looks really neat from my perspective. Saren Crystal bow. You know, everybody, of course, talks about the Saren God bow at tier 92, but this is a fun option as well.
You know what? What's funny about that is I used to have a bunch of different crystal weapon overrides and stuff from Keepsake. Just and the bow was something I used for a long time. That I forget what tier it was. Was it 87?
Or
no,
80
this was
if it's
this
attuned.
One was. Yeah, it was attuned. but it's real fancy looking. Like, I love that crystal look on the bows, and I think I used to do daggers and stuff too.
Yeah, I like the way the halberd looks, and I was just thinking of incorporating some of those into my gear. So this is definitely going to be a fun one to go through. Mourner's Mask as well. that's a good one. That's a throwback.
That is awesome.
Warriors. Yeah. This is the perfect introduction, I think, to sell Prif, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of give you that. Oh my god, we can't have nostalgic feelings for Prif. Like, already? Really? What? What's happening?
Yeah.
It's all going too fast now. Yeah.
Let's go through some of the other rewards that you get. In total, there's 18 tasks on the free side that give cosmetics and 17 that are premier tasks that give cosmetics that you need to pay for. So it's a 50-50 split right down the middle of where you get the free or where you get the cosmetics down free and members, which I think is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
You also get Hector the Hare and Heffy the Hare. Heffy, of course, based on Heffin, little rabbits. I already mentioned the Mourner gear, the Buck Stag. There's an Ithil knife override. That's the only Ithil piece that's here.
Ooh, but it's a knife.
Yeah.
We
have Kadarn Ranger overrides and weapons, the Traherne pickaxe override, Heffin Ranger cosmetic override, and the Saren Crystal Teleport. I'm eager to know what that one looks like. I imagine that one's going to be quite extravagant in terms of how that one looks.
I'm going to have to whip out the old... You know, when I first started, I mean, if you go way back, I am half-elven.
Yeah, so, Tanis half-elf.
That's
right. I remember
so that. I might have to get the old clothes. Well, not the old clothes. We got new clothes now, but we have to get the old titles, stuff like that.
The Elfborn.
The Elfborn, that's right.
Let's see. Where do you find these teleports? They're not in the... Oh, yeah, there we go. I got it up. It is in the teleport animation interface. Ooh, that looks neat. The Saren Crystal Teleport. So what happens with that one is that a number of Saren Crystals appear above your head, and then they start spinning, and your character is whisked up into the sky and blown away, or pulled away in terms of into some crystal particles.
Sweet.
That's going to be a fun one. That might get me off of my retro teleport override, honestly.
Cool.
We also have the Blade of Saildor, the Cloak of Saren, which I already highlighted, Emilia the Owl, Glareal's Trident. We haven't heard that name in a while.
Glareal's Trident?
Yeah.
You get a trident? Oh, tridents.
Yeah.
I want one. I'll have to figure out an outfit to use a trident with.
Yeah.
Yeah, I used to rock that shipwreck trident for years and years. Yeah.
There's also a Dark Crystal cosmetic override along with the Dark Crystal two-handed sword. That's the last item that you have available. Oh, yeah, the trident looks good. You can preview all these in the wardrobe interface. So you don't need to unlock them. You can see them. Let's see. Blade of Saildor. Ooh. That's
sounds like some Saron stuff.
Yeah, it's like a crystal machete almost. And it's got offhand variants too. Oh, that's good. Any other ones you want to see that I should marvel over that I just mentioned? I realize you can't see what I'm doing right now.
No, I mean, they all... I want them all. This is going to be the Pokemon Yak Track. I'm collecting all of them.
Yeah. Amazing stuff. And I feel like I say that every Yak Track. These things, the cosmetics that are available are always top tier. And in my view, that's the reason you should do the Yak Track, because I actually did go through this one and pull together what all the rewards look like for this thing. I pulled them off the RS wiki and counted of everything that was there. There's also a Caduceus stag. I'm not sure if you're saying that right. So multiple stags available too, which makes sense with the whole Prif Woodlands kind of thing.
Right, and you know what we had Shadow, and that was the Zaro stuff, right?
Yes.
Now we have Saren. What if we keep having Yak Tracks themed around this Elder God Wars?
Oh, so by that logic, the next one would be Gavixian.
It could be, right? Like, or however this is all going to shake out. I mean, I don't know, but I think it would be smart. And
yeah,
it's I don't know. I just thought about that. I'm like, wait a minute. We have God Wars going on. We've got Yak Track.
And for other things that you can get from this, 4 prismatic lamps, 3 mediums, and 3 larges, 3 small stars, 3 medium, 4 large, and 1 huge, 1 supreme small, 2 medium supreme, 2 large supreme, and 2 huge supremes, and 1 small smoldering lamp, 4 mediums, 1 large smoldering lamp, and 2 huge smoldering lamps. There's also 175 tight springs, 225 silver hawk down, 2 protein packs, 3 medium protein packs, and 3 large protein packs, 10 cinder cores, 14 pulse cores, 20 protein power-ups, 20 combat training dummies, 6,000 oddments, 125 dragon trinkets, 25 metallic dragon trinkets, 1 easy clue scroll, 3 medium clue scrolls, 3 hard clue scrolls, and 2 elite clue scrolls. So you can see here that the bulk of everything you get is cosmetic. More than half of what you get is cosmetic on that. So I'm very pleased with that. And I can't underscore how much I've been needing this Yak Track, because ever since Combat Week ended and the divination stuff had ended and double XP had ended, I was kind of like, what am I going to do next? Because the only 120s I don't currently have are, of course, Dungeoneering and Slayer, real 120s. And honestly, at this point, I really can't be forced to do that much Slayer going forward. it's just hitting that wall, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, so. I hear you. I'm glad to have finally whittled down. I mean, I'm finally down to just farming and a little bit of archaeology. Okay. But I mean, archaeology, I feel like, I don't know, that can happen any time. Like, I don't even, I'm not in a hurry.
Yeah.
I just want to keep doing it anyway.
I just have a couple notes about the various tasks. Crafting was moved to be just earn base XP in the crafting skill now.
That's
rather better than having it, you know, craft dinky gauntlets and stuff like that. There's a Saren Spirit Hunt one, and I was under the impression that, oh, maybe, you know, your Saren Spirits you get from Grace of the Elves would count from this. They don't count from this.
Where are you supposed to get them?
You get a Saren Crystal Shard from Angoth that helps you find Saren spirits around the world. It's just like the present hunt and the Christmas Yak Track.
Okay, so I'm not doing that one.
Why?
I wonder what the alternative.
Why? It's like a 5-minute task. You just teleport to various locations, and the thing gives you a hint. Like, one of the ones is a mountain where it's always snowy. And I don't know if this is a bug or not, but you can go to that mountain, find the Saren Spirit, hop world, find the same Saren Spirit on a different world, and keep hopping worlds until the task is done.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. So it's not too bad, and it's quicker.
Yeah, okay. That's... Damn, I'm going to have to go see that dude. Skip that.
There's also a wandering yak task. Find the wandering yak as he wanders around Gilinor. I haven't had one of those yet, so I'm not entirely sure on how that one works, but I'm sure there's hints on that. There's 2 of those, and I'm betting this is just going to be something like Bob, and perhaps there's like a friends chat or something that is that you're going to be able to find on that. I mean, at that point, if you don't want to do that, you could just do the alternate. But I think that's all I wanted to talk about in terms of the actual tasks. Everything else is largely the same as it was on the previous ones as well. In terms of tasks, I know they made the Hunter task be XP, and I think those XP ones are always good.
Yeah, it's a good change.
And I need to see as well just how many skill and kills we got this time. Yeah, it does exactly the same thing that they did last time, where up until task 20, every other task you have skill and kill as an option. And yeah, then after that, it's every two tasks.
Okay.
So that's good.
Yeah.
And then task 30, it's every three tasks and so on and so forth. I like that. I'm glad they kept that. Mm-hmm. But that's Yak to the Light. And this one runs until July 11th. Feels weird already saying that we're looking at July for these kinds of things, doesn't it?
Yeah, I thought that too when I read it earlier.
Yeah. Promotional material too for the Seren Crystal armor is good. The Ireworth armor is good. And Amelia the Owl. I think that one's going to probably have to be our cover image for this week on the video version of the show. But... all right, time to strap in. Moving on, Battle of the Monolith, week two. Dare I ask how long it took you this week?
Still in progress.
Oh!
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I haven't even been able to do it, so...
that's slightly worrying.
We'll get there. We'll get there.
Okay.
I don't know how.
It took me two tries. And it's still a lot to focus with accessibility, I'd say, right?
Yeah. It was just the problems from last week are now twice as much.
Yeah, because you have two paths to focus on now.
Yeah. So it just... yeah, it exponentially, got a lot harder in just about every respect that I was struggling with. So,
That worries me. That worries me. Because I'm wondering how many other players are out there feeling the same way and not articulating that.
I don't know, and I don't want to, I don't know how representative, I really am in any way.
Right,
because
how many players play the game with a magnifier right. And can only look at
yeah.
a corner of the screen at the same time?
Yeah, so it's, sometimes these things happen, and I have to stop, and I have to come back, and...
kind of like the tree puzzle.
Kind of like the tree puzzle. I was actually thinking the Zamorak quest, because that was one of these. It's happened a few times in this game. It happened with the Zamorak quest. It happened with the tree puzzle. It happened with Char. Char was about a 8 month long period for me of trying it here and there, every couple of weeks or so. So I mean these things. It's not like it never happens, but I need this shard. I feel like that's what
I,
that's
yeah,
the,
I feel
that's
like
the
everybody's gonna
of.
Want this shard at the end, right?
Yeah, that's the part I'm a little concerned about.
Yeah, we'll have to see what happens as we get closer to the end then, but we will have a look at what happened in the event. So you return to the battle site, talk to Ali, and ask how are you doing. And he says that he's well, but his brethren haven't been. And even without the crown, Ceridoman is a worthy match for both Azanadra and Nex. And the rest of their forces seem to have underestimated the fervor of yours. enough, Zaros says. And this, he sends out a blast of power, and the battle is dragged to a halt. Once more, I find myself having to intervene, my lord, as Anandras says. Zaros tells him to be quiet multiple times. Saren then appears, and whatever you're planning, it must end here, Saren is adamant of. Zaros says he's there for the Codex, and she says, does your greed know no bounds? Our mother's core, the crown, and now the Codex? Will that be enough? Will it finally sate your quest for power? My quest is none of yours. Go back to your garden. You know as well as I what Bic will think of it. And I'm just reading along here because obviously these initial parts of the week two aren't narrated. Zaros leaves. Saren is very shocked. She says, you're leaving again? When you could make a difference, you turn away and you run? You could stay and help us. We could work together to save our family, to save this world. Zaros says that the world is lost, and he says that, or Saren says rather, that we owe the Elder Gods our existence. And Zaros is fighting with Saren, effectively two twins here, and Zaros says, the only way to stop me is to kill me or go. And Saren leaves and disappears. And Azanandra wonders what is going on. And he sees it as a form of success because he says, the Codex is yours, the artifact, which you call the monolith. It wasn't originally built as a source of knowledge, and there's cracks in the skin of our reality, one here and one beyond Frenesque, shadow breaches, he calls them. And the Codex was made to seal this one, to protect Gielinor from the entropic energies that emerge. On the other side of the breach is another reality, a very different reality, as Anandra pointed out as Erebus. And Zaros says, yes, my destination. What I seek cannot be found in this universe, and so I go in search of another. I have the apparatus I require, the material to shield myself, a tool to guide me in that place. All that remains is to use the knowledge I've gained. As Anandra wants to go with him, Zaros says that he can't because the power would kill him. And then we're presented with our cutscene.
At last, his plans had come to fruition. The monolith lay undefended. With implacable will, he forced it open, revealing the truth that lay at its heart, a tear in the fabric of our reality. Then he departed from this world, heedless of the devastation that would follow in his wake. From that same gateway came beings of pure shadow, and with them a torrent of dark energy. Left unchecked, it would choke our world. But the worst was still to come.
And then we're into battle, part two. Do you have any takeaways from the story side here of what was presented on this Tanis?
Yeah, I mean, who knew Zaros was Terran, right? Like, this is crazy.
What do you mean, Terran?
Like, Star Trek reference.
Oh.
It's been a long, long time since there was one on the show.
You're right. And what this really provides is that it shows that the other shadow side of the universe that's being presented as Erebus, that has been presented as the Majorat afterlife, is in effect part of the shadow realm, and that's seeping in to our current world. And that shadow, those shadow fissures, both here and on Frenesque, are what we were warned of in Azanandra's quest, that would ultimately cause the Elder Gods to wake up, these kind of little infractions like that. And you can kind of see where the writing is going with this one now that this has kind of been laid out here, haven't we?
Yeah. But you just gotta wonder, like, Zaros has to think that, you know, he's after something, right?
Yeah.
I want to know, like, what.
Well, he wants to ascend and become an elder god.
Right, but there has to be a reason for going to the alternate reality thing that, you know, he went to.
You're right, and I don't have an answer to that as to what that could be. Thinking about it, I know that he potentially sees what he's doing as a way of powering himself up, and he mentions that the world is lost already. So what he could – and the only other time we've seen shadow energy or shadow anima take up this strong of a role was when we were talking about the Dragonkin plan to poison the Elder Gods with it. And surely Zaros can't be doing that. He can't, right? Like he wouldn't redo what the Dragonkin did to, or Karapak did to try and stop this whole situation. Because one, that wouldn't be good storytelling, and two, I'd imagine that he knows better on that front. So,
unless he somehow tries to incorporate it in him to be an anti-elder god. Like,
huh. Because
I don't know, there's got to be something over there for that he thinks he can beat them with.
Right, but I don't think he, like you said, based on what we see here, he doesn't care about the world. He says that this world's already lost. So he's approaching it. Perhaps his plan is to liaise with the next generation of elder gods after these ones that are going to hatch lay their eggs, and that's how he wants to incorporate himself into their plan. Because remember, him and Saren are from this revision. They're effectively the children or the playthings of this generation of elder gods that we have and laid their eggs, the eggs that are about to hatch. The current generation, of course, being Jazz, Wen, Bick, Full, and Ma. Ma, of course, being the stillborn one who stayed on Frenesque. So they laid their eggs, and what I'm thinking Zaros wants to do is, at this point, he's just concerned about himself, and he wants to be at the forefront when those next elder gods hatch to, in effect, be on their good books. And maybe, you know, say, hey, I'm the one who helped bring you guys to light. Make me one of you guys as an elder god. Maybe that's his plan. I don't know.
That doesn't seem like Zaros'
style. No, it doesn't.
This feels like you got to kill the boss to be the boss type of situation. If he, like, takes the pick, like, I could see him taking the place of one of them.
He could.
I don't know.
Yeah, but, you know, as Saren said, let's just go over what she said again here. So, in this discussion between the two of them, does your greed know no bounds? Our mother's core, the crown, and now the codex. Will it finally sate your quest for power? My quest is none of your concern. Go back to your garden. And then, following that, Zaros responds by saying, the world is lost, and they have never been our family. Saren feels that they owe those elder gods their existence. Zaros, of course, sees the complete exact opposite of that. But at the same time, there's definitely, like you said, something going on here that we're not aware of yet.
Yeah.
It's got to be something to do with the relation of Zaros to whatever's hatching or is going to hatch. Because we know that as shadow anima seeps into the world, that's going to cause those eggs to stir and hatch more. And especially so if some kind of god dies. That's going to wake them up even further.
Yeah.
And definitely. Nobody has died yet. But at the same time, you'd have to imagine that tinkering with the Codex and Ceridome and doing all sorts of things on the battlefield here is definitely going to, you know, hasten things along. So we got about 2 weeks left on this, I think. And there's going to be some really interesting things to come forward with this. We'll move on to the battle report from Nex just in just a moment here. But speaking of that, you do get the addition of Controlling Nex this week, in addition to Hellweir, Commander Zilliana, and Theracus, or however you pronounce that name. I enjoyed Controlling Nex. And the two paths are the North Path and the South Path by the Archaeology Guild campus that you need to play through on this. So, but yeah, it took me two tries and it's still ongoing for you. So maybe, I don't know, maybe we need to do some kind of guided thing like when you tried to kill the spider where we do it over voice or something like that.
Yeah. It would probably, yeah, it may come down to that. We'll see. Cause I need the shard. So,
the shard of Erebus.
Little concerned about that.
All right. Well, we'll figure something out as we go along.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a weekend coming, so yeah.
Yeah, yeah, lots of time. All right. Next up, battle report, September 12th. And this is battle plan actually features Char Nex. Speaking of Char, that you said you had an issue with previously in a quest. So the Frozen Horn bellowed and Nex felt power surge through her, converging on the helpless shadow cackler caught beneath her claw. With a pitiful squeak, it imploded into smoke. This wasn't how they had envisioned the battle going. The plan, as far as Char knew, was simply to show up, seize the monolith, and leave. Now they were fighting creatures from another universe, and Zaros was nowhere to be seen. Char took a breath, raising the frost horn to her lips once more, but at that moment, a vast, dark talon penetrated the swirling smoke, sweeping her cleanly off her feet. An enormous, Githorian-like beast of pure shadow towered over her, knocking, blocking out what little sun could be seen. Char, Nex screamed as the other claw struck down. With fractions of seconds to spare, Char heaved herself aside, leaving the claw to violently rake across the earth, tendrils of shadows oozing in its wake. A light flashed. Char threw a hand across her face as the creature roared in agony. "Be cautious," Ceridoman called from somewhere behind them. "It's more powerful than the others." As if Char couldn't tell, with the creature distracted, she jumped to her feet and raised the frosted horn once more. The creature ready to strike, but from nowhere a ball of shadow collided with its chest. It let out a howl of rage, lurching towards a source of its pain, Nex. She launched into the air, priming a second attack. Ceridoman hurled a fresh lightning bolt at the beast, causing it to stagger, yet it still wouldn't fall. "What matter of this creature have you summoned?" he barked. "A shadow behemoth," Nex retorted, "and we didn't summon it." "Merely let it through the gate then," Ceridoman replied. "Watch out." So what you're seeing here is that when these godlike beings are battling here, if they just scratch the ground on the earth, you're seeing that the shadow is starting to seep through. And that's kind of setting the tone of where we're headed and why I said that, okay, so we had what Carapac tried with Shadow Anima, but now we got further Shadow Anima seeping in. What's that going to do to the Elder Gods going forward? That's where I was thinking on this. And just like last week, the battle sequence really didn't make much sense until reading this battle report. And once again, there's a question of whether or not that's good gameplay or not, relying on a third-party resource to read that. I don't know. Do you feel any different this week?
Yeah, I don't really like that much. I wish it was in game somehow, somewhere, some way. And I wish it was, like, red.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'll continue reading at this point. With a grin, Next did just that, and this is when they're focusing on the behemoth, swooping down to claw at the monster directly. Another cackler rose up from the puddle at Char's feet, and she whirled into action, blasting it with a jet of flame just as the third popped up. The air hissed and crackled with magic. The creature howled as Nex and Ceridoman wore it down, spell by spell. And this is, of course, the dramatic telling there that wore it down, spell by spell, in that you are having these things seeping through that are even posing to be a problem for Nex and Ceridoman, two very powerful entities that we know. We have to keep it away from the front line, Ceridoman yelled. Nex glanced over her shoulder at a small group of humans struggling to put down a limping shadow cackler. Agreed, she hissed, dragging the behemoth back towards the monolith. The shard of shadow deep within her heart thudded with adrenaline, eager to strike. As if she read Nex's mind, Char blew the frosted horn again as Nex flapped her wings. Acrid smoke enveloped the monster as it swiped furiously but fruitlessly at the air where Nex had been just seconds before. The beast seemed to shrink and shudder, almost collapsing in on itself. Nex landed beside Ceridoman, savoring the chance to catch her breath. Good to see you cleaning up your own messes, Ceridoman said, eyebrow raised. The fight's not over yet, Nex snarled. The shadow behemoth strained to its feet once more, snarled and lurched around to face them. Its massive body flickered and then it vanished entirely invisible. Nex turned to the god. Your turn. Good luck.
Oh.
And once again, this is showing that the gravity, this is showing the gravity of the situation through this posting on the main website. You don't get the sense of urgency in game that you get from these postings here. And
no, that's really, I mean,
and that's the whole problem with it.
Yeah, no, because that's, I mean, that's good writing. You're in the story. You're wanting to, I don't know. It's a lot more immersive. Like that's what kind of gets you drawn in.
Right.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm sure we'll be back next week or the week after, or even the week after that with another lore discussion on this, because when you start summing these things all together, you have week one and you have week two and you combine what we're likely going to see next week, you're going to be bound to be put onto something interesting. But my point is that for anybody who hasn't read the battle reports yet, or you're just going based on what you see in game, you kind of got to take this as a whole of experience approach. And if you don't, then that's kind of focusing on what you're missing. But then again, you have to ask, is that good game design? To rely on people reading,
right?
Like, reading what you have outside.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the whole problem, is how much you are missing, because I think it's a really valuable part of
right
story, and, you know.
But at the same time, how would you put this story into game? I'm playing devil's advocate here.
Right.
How would you put this into game? Because it's so detailed.
You could do it as like an inner dialogue, or if someone was literally writing a report. Like I said, I mean, it lends itself to being narrated.
Right. But we do have that with a cutscene. But those cutscenes are short.
Yeah.
And looking at it from this way, I can see how it benefits by having all this. But at the same time, if I was tasked with putting this all together, I don't know how I would put this much lore in game for something that is the so-called mini quest.
Yeah. See, I think if it was just an addition, right? It was some filling. It was some, you know, nice jewelry on top. You know, that would be one thing. But this feels like it's kind of essential to the story, right? Or to understanding what just happened.
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes, that's why it's different.
Unless. Right?
That's why it feels different.
Unless this is the icing in these battle reports, and the main story is just supposed to be focusing on the four that we see in the cover art, Zaros, Azanadra, Saren, and Sarah Doman. Unless you're going to have a base story out of that that is just going to be enough, and you don't need any of this extra stuff, and we're just being really pedantic here as, you know, lore players and quest players.
Well,
that's an option too, I guess, is that we're just being too pedantic on this.
That does happen.
Yeah, I know lots of people who are like that. And I know lots of people who devour this lore week after week and have been wanting this. But at the same time, what if what we have in game is enough? It's an interesting question, because I don't think we asked that question last week, did we? Is that
we didn't, and
if there was a focus on just Sarah Doman, Saren, Azanadra, and Zaros going into the future on this, would that be enough? And I think based on what we're seeing in game, the answer is yes.
But we're also, the answer is yes, because we have 2 weeks now to go on. And last week felt
precisely
very much like a sliver
of
a piece, you know.
Because from the sounds of it and everything you take in game, Ali doesn't know if Zaros is coming back.
Yeah, that's true too.
If you go to the very end of it, when you talk to Ali and Trindy, Ali says, so he's really gone. Trindy says that these look like shadow creatures, the sort that used to come up and bother me in the vault. Of course, she was stored in the Vault of Shadows, and we freed her in that archaeology mystery, and we need to close those portals fast. And when you ask Ali if Zaros will come back, Ali says, who can say? He has survived the last one apparent death, and is Erebus worse than that? I don't know. As for when he might return, I don't know. Perhaps tomorrow? Perhaps beyond both our lifetimes? Azanadra would know more than I. See what he has to say once this is all over. Once this is all over. So we're.
And see what happens now, since he's already there.
He's gone. He went through the codex, and I mean, we don't know what's on the other side. It's Erebus, presumably.
But where's the battle at now? Like, there's no more battle for the monolith, right? Like, battle over.
Yeah, it's just leaking things now. If we just got to find a way to seal it up.
Yeah.
And it's also very important to note that I assume Erebus is on the other side based on what we know about it. Ali assumes that it's Erebus on the other side as well. But we don't have absolute confirmation that it is indeed Erebus. And what if this is a red herring? Who can say? And then in that same exchange, he says, I don't know, 2 times. Ali, that is.
Well, I guess he doesn't know.
Right. And that's why I think maybe we shouldn't be jumping to conclusions on this.
Well, we'll see. I mean, another week, another piece will, you know, eventually it's starting to fill in a little bit.
Yeah, and Alex actually has an Informer article that'll be out by the time you guys are all hearing this. He talked about why doing updates at a, you know, piece by piece like this actually works for the game. Sirion's last week was on about how we should be doing the opposite of that. His was play, don't tell, in terms of being able to actually play this content and, you know, just not read it to us, so to speak. So some interesting back and forth happening on Informer there, which I like. It's very important that we do that kind of thing. So I just want to say before we move on, I realized we were picking at the weeds from the battle report, right? But at the same time, when you look at everything that Ali has said, he said a whole lot without saying much at all. And perhaps factoring that in and everything happening on the surface, this is more than enough based on where we're headed with this week. So that's my guess, and I'm content to wait for Monday on this now.
Yes.
So, one final note on this. The pieces for this have been dropping at game reset time. We'll see when the next one drops. So it dropped at game reset on Monday, or on Tuesday, rather, last week. I assume it'll be on Monday this week because it's not a bank holiday in the UK. So we don't need to wait until update time to actually play it.
Hey.
Next up, patch notes. So, patch notes, very, 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 very thin this week. Achievements and title. Golden Clue titles can no longer be used by players who have not met the requirements to obtain them. Meta achievements will now be visible when you have two or fewer achievements left to complete. Meta achievements with names that span multiple lines will no longer overlap other meta achievement names. For the UI, on the UI end, the font for the login flow on the lobby has been updated to TrueType to increase readability on both the desktop and mobile clients. We'll talk more about this on the live stream section because this is the start of them moving to scalable vector font status.
Oh.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Players will no longer become stuck on the shop tutorial while on the wealth optional path in Burthorpe. That's funny. The 10% XP boost, these are hot fixes now from Battle of the Monolith, now expires correctly and no longer applies to Iron Man. That was fixed early last week. Players can once again place dwarven multi-cannons inside allowed instance areas. And Rolomia will now show up to her own party at the Jolly Boar Inn for the Once Upon a Time flashback mini-quest.
Well, that sounds like it was a problem.
Yeah, very much so, since she featured very heavily in that, and that's a whole part of the quest. All locked-out players should now have received their additional bonus charge on their Guardian's Gift, and if you used all of your charge before this hotfix, please reclaim the Guardian's Gift from Diango. And players are now able to use their Traveling Merchant coupon to activate the or access the Traveling Merchant stock at the Deep Sea Fishing Hub. And that's the patch notes for the week. Have you noticed how the patch notes have been so thin these last couple weeks?
They have been. Probably because the ninjas have been doing other things.
Yeah, that's my guess as well. All right. So we have to have a talk.
Mm-hmm.
You remember 2 weeks ago when we were talking about the Elite Dungeons fiasco? And how there was the talk of bans and whatnot, and they were going to be temporary. And we said that would only be passable if there was wealth removal.
Mm-hmm, because we wouldn't want someone to gain from such an act, right?
Yep.
Because then a ban would just be part of the price of doing business, right? That would be a bad incentive.
Yep.
Or a bad precedent.
Yeah, which was talked about last week, and something that Maude Warden said he wants to look into, and I think it needs to be looked into sooner rather than later. And as it turns out, there was no wealth removal done for these people. There's no title removal done. There was no achievements removed. So there you have it.
So nothing was rolled back in any
Nothing was any rolled way. Back.
Yep. Which I have to think there...
But it was very, very tiny impact on the economy. Only hundreds of people involved.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even... I'm not even, I don't even, I don't care about the like economy part as much as I'm thinking.
It's about sending a message. Maybe,
yeah. And maybe it's that they didn't, I don't know. It could it just be too hard technically to track down what was, you know, ill-gotten and what wasn't. That's the only reason
I want to say we're playing devil's advocate with this, but I honestly don't know the answer to that question.
I mean, that's the, I don't know. That's just the only thing that makes any sense to me.
Yeah.
And then it becomes a matter of, well, do you want us to spend our resources doing this, tracking this stuff down, rather than giving you updates?
Like, they've rolled this back before for when there was that augment glitch with the promotion last year. They've rolled they rolled back people for the invention stuff when that came out. So, I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility to take something off of an account. We know that much. I just want to run through some numbers on this right now because, you know, the number you've seen floating around in the community has been that it's been about a 500 million GP per hour profitability in terms of if you are abusing this bug, right?
Mm-hmm.
But ordinarily, if you're doing Elite Dungeon 3 legitly, you can, and you're doing it very well, you can get about 4 kills an hour or so. And this is numbers from David, our PVM expert. So then I said, okay, so take this off. If you were just killing the ambassador back-to-back, he estimated you could probably do about 11 to 12 ambassador kills in an hour. Now, this boss was farmed for the Eldritch Crossbow, which is a very powerful crossbow made up of 4 parts. Each part is worth about, on average, 1.1 billion. Lowest 900 mil, most expensive 1.4. So just assuming an average of 1.1 billion with a drop rate of 1 in 55 for solo per piece, what that means is that it would take you 13 hours to have a 95% chance at getting a single piece. Probably less than that, probably closer to somewhere 7 or 8 if you were just going for the pieces itself. Now, that does not include anything else that the ambassador drops. Now, looking at what you can do for the ambassador in terms of all of the other stuff that it drops, when you factor that in, if you did hundreds of hours of this, your drop rate would level out. And because of that, you know, it's theorized that some of these accounts had about 200 pieces or so. And that's the key point here, is that extrapolating this out over the long run, 250 million GP per hour is probably more realistic than 500 mil an hour. 500, of course, is a nicer number and it reads nicer. Mm-hmm. But 250 mil an hour, if you were farming this with this glitch.
Yeah, that makes more sense to me.
Assuming you're not dying and whatnot.
Well, would you be doing this bug if you're going to be dying and stuff?
No. No. Yeah. And I just want to take a step back and look at the precedent that was set here. Because I know 500 sounds like a lot, but David and I estimated probably closer to 250. And at the very low end, if you were just looking at crossbow pieces and it averaged out, about 85 mil an hour. Not factoring in commons or anything else you might get or better luck along the way. So that's why 250 is a better stretch for that. But how do we feel about that? I mean, what has been said is that you can effectively go out and abuse this bug. Then you'll get a 2-week vacation and you'll get to keep the profits you earned along the way.
Yeah.
That's what this looks like. And this is why it looks so bad.
Well, it looks like that because that's what it is. Like, of what it is. And that's it's now going to be factored in. Like I said, now it'll be, well, maybe that's just the price of doing business. Maybe, yeah, I don't have to play for a couple weeks. When I come back, I'm loaded though.
Oh yeah, and then go to an alt in the meantime, and then transfer some of that money back, and there's some bond money for membership on the alt.
And that's what I wonder, like, if that is where things are breaking down. That there's so many trades, so much wealth transfers that you can't track it down. You don't really know.
But you have the data of all the trades. Surely you can, you know, piece things together to see where it's going.
And you could, but do you want to spend that development time doing that, or are you going to make the game?
Or are you just going to say, yeah, it's only a few accounts. These kind of things happen, away we go, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's not good, and it's, you know, I just have to wonder, like, how it would have been done to begin with. Like, how would we have even gotten that result? And I don't have any answers.
What do you mean? What result?
Removing the wealth. Like, how would you remove it? You know, like, I don't know if they had the capability of doing it.
They do. Because I know people had wealth removed for the oddments thing last fall.
Well, I wonder if that was easier to track.
I don't know. I think that it's trackable regardless of whether it's a GP or an oddments transaction. Because if it was with the exchange, or if it was a trading game, surely there's got to be, with all the anti-real-world trading stuff and the bot stuff, there's got to be a trade on, or a trace on, you know, in-person trades.
You would think so, but I mean, if that's the case, then like I said, it goes right back to, there's a cost to that.
Right. But at that same point in time, if you're not going to do that, look what that does for the integrity of the game.
Yeah, maybe this was was a price worth paying, maybe not. I mean, I don't know. Is it worth the extra heat because an update is slow, or, you know, been delayed a little bit?
And I think we would have had a different discussion last week after the Leeds Q&A had we known that there's no wealth removal.
Yeah. I think that's undoubtable, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, we got to get an answer on Warden Promise number 2 about this ban policy. It's got to be done within the next 2 months, I'd say, by September, probably, or the end of the summer, let's just say, end of August. And figure out what the heck is going on with this and what this means for abusing these kind of exploits like this. Because if you can abuse these exploits like this, it completely changes the clientele your game is going to draw in.
Well, yeah, and not only that, but you can publicize it and share it, and you're safe. You're totally safe. Nothing to worry about.
And I know that we talked about this with the oddments thing. The guy who made the video about the oddments glitch did have those removed from his account and had the hammer brought down on him. And you gotta just wonder,
wonder why. What is the difference?
What is the difference between this and GP from the Elite Dungeons?
So that means there has to be a difference, right? Like, or am I just giving it too much credit? Because
there is a difference. There is a difference. Oddments are more directly tied towards real world money than GP is, and gameplay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I guess there's your difference. It's all fun and games till you cost me some money, boy.
And you know what the funny part is, and perhaps the sad part? We wouldn't be having this discussion if we had Maud Osborne's bank bidders from all those years ago. Because then there would have been a clear thing of what happens when somebody breaks the rules like this, and it would have gone down that same path you talked about, civil asset forfeiture.
Oh, is that what the bank bidders were? I thought it was like inactive accounts.
No, it was people who were banned.
Oh, crap. Okay. You know, maybe there's a cause for it.
Ay. All right. Mobile showcase. We have a launch date for mobile. An official launch date. Finally. Yeah. And they said the 17th of June. And I think it was Maud Liam who had to underscore. He said, yes, that means the 17th of June, 2021.
Gotta verify.
Yeah, because, so many times like that, it's been a question of when it's going to be, but lo and behold, here we are, two weeks away from this. And with that, the way we go on this is that pre-registration is currently at tier 3, closing in on tier 4. And I have some questions if they're actually going to get to tier 5 on this, because they got to tier 3 relatively quickly, and the question is, in 2 weeks, can you get to 4 and then 5?
Well, they're all there. It's just being counted right now. So, just got to give it some time. Let them count. And then in the end, it'll be okay.
I get what you're saying is that, the metrics weren't made clear and, where we're at wasn't made clear. So, maybe the numbers will be fudged as we get closer. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, they could do that, but I feel that'd be bad taste if they did. But
it's open-ended, right? Because they're like, we have all the people we're going to need. We just don't have them yet. Like, it was said in such a way that, like, I don't know. What did that mean? I still don't know.
Right. It was a bit of a weird discussion on that. And after that, the live stream pivoted to a tutorial playthrough of the new Dave and Dale tutorial, which, as we theorized back when we first talked about this, it was built for a mobile audience to cover the bases in a shorter time frame, the time frame that a mobile audience would expect. And the goal, and I found this very, very neat that they mentioned this. They said the goal is to show that RuneScape has much more agency than your typical MMO that would give you a shopping list or a list of NPCs to kill, and then you return to the other NPC and rinse and repeat. That was the goal of the Dave and Dale tutorial. Which...
But I thought it was more kind of like the...
What do you mean?
I thought when we talked about it having been much more easy to follow.
Yeah, it was more easy to follow. But the point is that you can also, in effect, bend a little bit. And it's not just, RuneScape isn't going to be just about your typical kind of fetch quest, right? Which is what...
Right.
Other MMOs are, and they want to show that in the tutorial, which I think is good.
Okay, yeah.
The Dave and Dale tutorial will not be the default tutorial on PC. If you start on mobile, though, you will be able to finish the Dave and Dale tutorial on PC, and the controls will work just fine. And there was a question saying that if you die in the tutorial, what happens? It turns out that the mayor rescues you. That big fat guy.
That's great.
Following, Mary McNug. Yeah, that's a funny name. But following from this, they talked about the interface improvements for the mobile game client, including a completely new chat user interface as well. Alongside this includes chat settings for filter, text sizes, badges, the profanity filter, and chat HUD visibility. This will be coming to mobile only initially. And the idea behind this is that the chat will be a lot more readable than it was on previous incarnations of mobile. And I think we all agree with this, that the chat box on mobile, as we had it, was really clunky, right?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't read it or anything, but I didn't even really like how just the space that it was taken up, where it was at. I wasn't a big fan.
Yeah, and now the way it's set, based on how it looks in these videos, is that you'll be able to see the chat expand to fill the entire left-hand side of the screen, and with that you'll also be able to thumb between your public chat, your friends chat, your private chats, your clan chat, guest clan chat, the grouping system, the emotes menu. And you're not going to have to, tap that other small little button to open up your friends chat, for example. So that was, one of the big niggles I had with the mobile client as it was. And I can't wait to get my hands on this to see how it performs. Because keeping in mind, we don't have access to the iOS beta anymore. They had to shut that down this week. 2 weeks. Yeah, 2 weeks, Tannis. 2 weeks.
Yeah, well, it's 2 weeks too late. Man, like I haven't played very much because I'm not having mobile this week. Like, yeah, I was like, oh wow, I didn't realize how much I played RS.
Oh yeah, it's really interesting when you take it away, how much you realize how much you need that, right?
Yeah, I was like, oh, okay, well, I actually, the majority of my playtime now is on mobile, so that's interesting. I didn't realize.
And this UI is also really good that they showcased as well for the settings. I mean, at least from what I can see here, though you can never really tell until you truly interact with something. But they've also adjusted the HUD chat visibility, because previously it had the off option. It would appear dynamically when you'd get a message, or it would always appear. But now the options are tailorable so that it just works a whole lot better than that previous one, in terms of needing to tap that button every so often as well. So that's good. Mm-hmm. And there's also a new UI of actually sending messages. And once again, based on how the pictures of this look, I'm not sure how I feel about it. You effectively tap the chat box or tap one of your private messages, and a little box in the very top center of your screen will appear, and then you can start typing on the bottom half of your screen with the keyboard, and then with that, you hit enter and the message sends. And it feels as though that this kind of chat UI might be a little bit pasted on top in terms of, I don't know, it just doesn't feel as though it fits with the way the game is set up, and I don't think I've ever seen any kind of game client do chat like that, so it just looks a bit weird, but I'm going to wait to pass official judgment on that until I get my hands on it. But if I had to just go based on how it looks, I don't know how I feel about it.
That's fair. I don't really have anything, because I just don't interact with chat mobily.
Right. Yeah, and I think I've experienced that. I've tried messaging you when you were on mobile and got no response.
Okay. Yeah, no. I don't see it at all.
Previously, you only used to be able to change the game language on mobile by changing the game or changing the language of your device. Now you can change that from the lobby and access the according worlds. TrueType fonts have been brought to the login screen, the lobby, and some parts of the character creator. And this is, of course, what we've been talking about. The TrueType font rendering. That is finally here. So
yay.
We've been waiting for that for a long, long time. And you can actually see it on the lobby screen right here. You know, the buttons create free account and your actual name do look a lot more smooth than they previously did. So that's a good change. And you can even see that on the desktop side as well. Apparently, you can also see all of the TrueType font rendering in the dev console as well. If you open up the dev console, you can see what that looks like.
That's cool.
Yeah, that looks looks better. But there wasn't really too much new information in this live stream. Just look back over the notes and see if I see anything else. Over time, through full commercial launch and into the game's future, fonts will be updated in-game, and desktop users can see this font on the dev console, and I just demoed that on the video version. And as for mobile UI scaling for tablets, they said maybe the current focus is phones, and they're definitely going to look at it going forward, which I know you feel very strongly about because you've used it on iPad, right?
Yeah, I preferably use iPad when I'm right. playing RS. I mean, I haven't ran into problems, but I mean, it's just very hard to base. It's very hard to base things off my experience, I guess.
As we can tell from the Battle of the Monolith, right?
Yeah. I mean, I want to be fair about everything, and I think it's hard to base it off my experience.
Yeah, and of course the experience we're talking about is on the desktop side playing with a magnifier, and on the iPad side, I don't know how you do that. Do you magnify your screen for that, or?
No, it's but things are with the iPad. You can just like I don't know. You bring it in close. It's got everything. I zoom in, you know, obviously a lot. I use a lot more of the camera in zooming in with the interface, you know, using the interface scaling. But that's the difference. Like, instead of relying on my accessibility features that I have built in to my computer, I really have to rely on what RuneScape gives me when it comes to mobile. Because I can't use the same accessibility features that I would normally use on my phone.
Right.
For Noble.
Right. Okay. Understood. Yeah. Well, 17th looks good, and, you know, that falls on a Thursday, so that's recording day, so that should be good fun.
Hey.
All right, so we do have a couple questions this week, but before we do that, I'll just thank our Patreon supporters for making this episode and all we do here possible. We did have a bit of an internet problem with Zant's internet. He was going to be on the monthly bit this coming month, and that'll be recorded on Saturday, so you can expect that late Saturday or Sunday at some point. But we haven't forgotten about it. It's being produced. We're doing a monthly bit on the rise and fall of the Java game client this month, so you can look forward to that. And thank you to all these people for making that episode possible, including Andrew C, Arvids L, Brock H, Cameron, CGB900, Kristen S, Chunk the Monk, Cook Me Plox, Danny C, Diana, Drama Free, Dream Delayed, Duramax, Dusty P, Gila Fleur, Jade Gizmo, Jason S, Jim M, Kevin G, Kyle, Lucky Ducky, Malinoric, Nora, Pernasius, Rastafa, Ricky A, Samuel FL, Scott DS, Soupfinder, Staubeve, Tanner JW, The Bears OP, The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V, Vinny, and Zant. Thank you all of you for your support. It does truly mean the world to us. And if you want to learn more about what this is about, just check us out at patreon.com/rsbnb for as little as $1 a month. You get access to the entire back catalog of monthly bits, including the ability to vote on those topics. The one coming down the pipe very, very soon will be about the rise and the fall of the Java client. So that should be a real fun one to discuss. It's produced. I like the way it's looking, but we're going to record that on Saturday, and I can't wait to share that with everyone. For $3 a month, you'll gain access to the special VIP rank on Discord and high-quality stereo versions of the podcast and a mention at the start of the month. And for $5 a month, you'll get a shout out each and every week and gain exclusive access to the outtakes we use for the clip show in addition to everything else. So if you want to get an early in on those clips, that's the insider tier for $5 a month. Check us out at patreon.com/rsbnb. When we reach $200 a month, we'll do a special thank you Patreon postcard mail out to everybody as a token of our appreciation and maybe something else. We've got some discussions going on behind the scenes about what that could be. And should we reach the $500 a month target, Tannis will do a one-time episode where we subject our taste buds to a wide range of spice, otherwise known as hot ones. You think we'll be able to pull through with that when we do that? I think I'll be fine.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll make it, but only because I will probably be numb after the first, like, four. kind of like, you know, when you're taking shots, I mean, after a few of them, you take just about anything, because you don't taste it anyway.
As long as you can still stand, right?
Yeah, yeah, hot ones is going to be something else. I'm glad that we'll have mobile by that time, because we'll probably need it.
I don't want to ask why, but okay, fair enough. All right, moving on to questions. First one from I Am Durham. Hi, all. Any planned discussion on the effect of massive influx of mobile players into the RS3 economy? I feel like this would be an awesome podcast topic, and I 100% agree with you on this.
Yes, I think I would. I'd sell my wand.
Yeah, that's the typical stereotypical answer that always comes up in this situation. Yeah. But I feel like we should be treating this like a double XP weekend.
I mean,
with
if
a focus
anything,
on raw materials.
That's what I was gonna say. Yeah, what they call that in commodities, what have you, like. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's probably what I would look at. Now, that being said, I don't even think I would, like, invest a whole lot or anything like that. Just maybe see how it goes.
Right, and we don't know how big the spike is going to be. I mean, if it's like this Steam spike that was about 10%, 10, 15%, we're not really going to feel that.
Right.
But if it's upwards of, you know, 25-30%, you're definitely going to feel that.
Yeah, and I mean, this is going to be more of a sustained demand than just like the day of a boss release type
right.
of situation, right? So you don't necessarily have to prepare for it. You can probably still participate and come out ahead. Even if you wait to,
yeah, and it's going to be like a shifting scale as well. I mean, you're going to see, I think if the spike is more than 10%, you're going to see it start to, show itself off in the primary gathering skills of fishing, wood cutting, and mining, you know, first in the 30 to 60 band range, right? And then the 70 to 80 band range, and then 80 to 90, and so on and so forth. And then you gradually get up to the point where you're going to be talking about things like divine charges as well. Now, that's good for everybody who's already playing, because there's lots of these skills that we're pointing our fingers at right now where you can just go in, jump in, and benefit from that. So I think that's a good thing. Another good potential thing with this is that when you add more players to the game, we have a set amount of GP in the game already, right? And these players aren't going to be high-alking things and bringing new GP into the game right off the bat. So it spreads the amount of GP that we have in-game around rather than bringing in a whole load of new GP. And you see where I'm going with this.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has been talking in recent years about GP inflation. It's a thing. We all know it is. This is going to be good for that problem as well.
Yeah, this keeps it moving.
Exactly.
You don't want it getting stuck and just, you know, switching from hand to hand down there at the sand casino.
Right, because that does happen.
Oh, yeah.
Now, sure does. Now, this is dealing with the side of new players coming in, and I think that I think we covered most of our T's there. Now, when we start dotting out the I's for the existing players, what does this mean for everybody existing? I don't know what the split of Android versus iOS is going to be, but keep in mind there have only been 10,000 iOS players since the very beginning on this because of the beta cap, 10,000 iOS beta players.
Yeah.
So presumably you're going to see that many and more come in on the iOS mobile side, and say that number is 2 to 3 times that over. And I think that's fairly generous at this point. I don't think you're going to see 30,000 iOS players come in on day one.
No, but I think you might see more than what we have in the beta. Because
yeah, absolutely.
More there's than... a lot of people that didn't make it into the iOS.
Yeah, that... I know of people on that, yeah. that wanted to get in and didn't last year. So as a result of that, we talked about the new player perspective. What this means is that you're also going to see an influx in existing members doing things a little bit more AFKable. And that points to, of course, skills like divination and your gathering skills and whatnot, and just your general skilling stuff. You're going to start to see more of that done on mobile and more of it done throughout the day. So you're going to start to see more of those things come in as well. And in theory, based on what we just outlined here, you're going to have a better situation if you have more new players than existing players picking up mobile. The best case scenario would be that everything balances everything out and we really don't feel too much of a shock. But the potential downside, I think, that comes from all of this is that if you have, and correct me if I'm wrong on this train of thought, is that if you have more existing players picking up mobile than new players, you could potentially see an influx of resources coming into the game, pushing those prices down.
That sounds correct to me.
Yeah.
Because you need them new players, too, to be using this stuff. And if everybody...
If everybody's making it, you're really not benefiting anyone in terms of the value there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So just keep that in mind that, you know, you want to even split... at the worst, but you'd prefer to have more new players than old players, economically speaking, I think. In-game, economically speaking. There's your RuneScape Mad Money segment for the week, folks. I don't know if you have anything else you'd like to add to that, Tanis.
No, we need a soundboard.
I used to watch that show, Jim Cramer's show, from time to time. I don't know if that surprises you.
No, because I mean, other than being very theatrical, I don't know a lot about Kramer. So
okay,
I don't know. Is he Keynesian? You gotta be Keynesian to be.
I don't think so.
Okay, well, probably wouldn't agree a whole lot with him then. I don't know.
Thank you, Durham, for that question. The next one from Questscaping, what kind of story content do you think benefits from a more serialized format? Ooh, I feel like that's stabbing at the heart of what we talked about earlier, isn't it?
Well, it's kind of twisting it.
Yeah.
Twisting the knife a little.
I'm going to say read Alex's article, and that might be a valid argument to be made for the content as we're seeing it this week. And I'm not going to leave that as the sole answer of this. But in terms of serialized content, I'm just going to lay it out as I see it. I think if you're going to do serialized content in a game, you don't want to have it drag on over months because that's bad. You risk losing players along the way. One of the best serialized storyline that I have had told to me in games both come from Star Trek Online. When the game went free-to-play in 2012, they did a number of featured episode arcs, and they would effectively put 4 episodes out in 1 month, once a week, and each episode would take, 25 to 30 minutes to play through. And they would form a part of a bigger story, and they did this 3 or 4 times over the span of that year or so. That was a really fun way of serialized storytelling, because you knew it was going to take an entire week, or an entire month to go through that storyline, and you got special rewards for doing it at that time. You could still go back and play them later, but you got special rewards for doing it then and there. So I think that's one way to do it over the span of a month like that, week to week. And maybe that's what we're doing here, but it's about, you know, 2 to 3 times the existing gameplay of what we have with Battle of the Monolith. That made that worthwhile to me. And the other one is another Star Trek Online story episode run that they did. They did a run in the summer of 2015, spanning from May through September, of about 6 episodes wrapping up a storyline that had been going on for years. And it was, you know, back-to-back, in effect, advancing the same story. And it worked really well. And I think it was a fun way to interact with the game. So I think where it comes down to with serialized storytelling is that you have to have it contrite in such a way that you're not dealing with it over the span of many, many months, like 6 months to 10 years, as we've seen in the case of RS before, like with Prif. But I think it's much better at the smaller scale, like, you know, a month long or maybe 2 or 3 months long kind of thing. And, you know, they could totally do that with mini quests, I think, if they, you know, did one a week. And who knows, maybe we might look back at Battle of the Monolith and see that as a very positive thing at the end.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I think it all comes down to like what you were saying. It's the time frame that we're talking about with the serialized content. You know, over a month is probably, you know, ideal. But yeah, I mean, we've seen storylines that will drag and drag and drag and drag. I think our concern, or at least my concern last week, was when you do it with a mini quest or really anything, you got to make sure you have enough content to work with. And this week, I think it had a different feel because we had the foundation from last week, so it didn't feel like as much of a sliver.
Right.
But that isn't necessarily a matter of the serialization of the content as much as it is the amount of content and how you're breaking that up.
Yeah. So effectively what I'm getting from this is that it has to be on a tight timeline or time scale, but it's also got to be worthwhile content.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of players weren't feeling this as worthwhile. And I think that's from how it was presented, honestly. Because last week's was just in and out. Poof, so quick.
Yeah.
And, you know, I talk to people about this. And, you know, I have a Discord of Clan Quest people and other people. And they're like, is this an update? Should this have been called an update as it was? And, you know, I can see that if this pans out, this might fall into the bracket of what we talk about as being good for serialized storytelling. But at the same time, these first 2 weeks, it really didn't feel as though it was hitting that mark as benefiting from the serialized format.
Right. And I think that's because it's a mini quest. That's my gut feeling.
Yeah.
You could do this with a quest, you know, even a medium sized quest, but I just don't know if a mini quest lends itself to being the best format for this.
No. I mean, you might make the argument that if they had something similar to World Event 1 or 2 on this in concert with this, then you could make that argument. Because that's, you know, what people always think of with live event and RuneScape.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you look at what we have had so far, and it really doesn't tick that box. So I think it just needs to feel more fruitful, so to speak, to tick that box right now. But I'm willing to have my mind changed should we get bigger revelations as we move forward.
Yeah. Well, there's more to come.
Yeah.
The worst is yet to come.
Yeah, they end with that each and every week. I did read the spoilers as doing my due diligence, as I mentioned last week. And each week, except for the last week, does end with the worst is yet to come. I will say that. Anyways, let's move on, start wrapping up the show. And we have two picks of the week this week that are tech news related. And they're tech news because we got to just warn you guys to head in the opposite direction of both of these. And I'm going to start with mine first, and that's Twitter Blue. And perhaps that's actually not a good name for it, because typically if you're blue with something, that means you're sad.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
And, you know, we get to be the guinea pigs. Twitter Blue is rolling out in Australia and Canada. And for anybody who picks up a Twitter Blue subscription, you will get bookmark folders, which is a better way to organize your saved tweets. You'll get an undo tweet option, giving you the option to edit your tweet. With the undo tweet feature, you can set a customizable timer of up to 30 seconds to click undo before the tweet reply or thread you sent will post to your timeline. So it's you get 30 seconds in order to make sure that you actually want to press send. You got to pay for that. There's also reader mode, which they say gives you a beautiful reading experience by getting rid of the noise. And they've made it easier to keep up with long threads by turning them into easy-to-read text so you can read all the content simultaneously.
Oh, that's so nice that they're charging for accessibility features.
Right?
WTF.
You also get access to perks such as customizable app icons.
Huh, yeah, that sounds like more...
Yeah, you know, the other iOS Twitter clients have done this for years. And you're paying for this for the grand price of $3.49 Canadian or $4.49 Australian per month, which means it'll be likely be $2.99 US a month. It's just... I'm going to, you know, just break the censor here and say that this is a load of crap.
Those are things that should be updated anyway.
Yeah.
Like that shouldn't be charged.
Yeah. You want to start making this compelling? Ad-free experience.
Yeah.
The ability to have your tweets rise up against others in other people's home timelines. When they view that home timeline option, you're a paying customer. Your tweets should be higher ranked in other people's timelines. Exempt from content moderation, so you can be as provocative or as disruptive as you want on the platform. Those are the three things I'd like to see in a paid Twitter.
They wanted version. To make a lot of money. That last one,
right? You know who I'm specifically thinking of with this, in the segment of the population I'm thinking of, right?
Yeah, they would pay.
I'm thinking of the people who flocked off to Parler or something like that. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, no, they would pay.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It took 15 years at this point. The company was set up in 2006, and it took 15 years for a monetization model to come up to this.
Yeah, right. And yeah, you're monetizing something that should be free. I mean, I'm glad that they're looking at the AAA gaming world as a guide here, but let's not do that, guys. You know, don't release your DLC as an undo button. Are you serious?
Like, who's going to pay for this? Like, I mean, I know who's going to pay for it, and they're those stereotypical Twitter users who, you know, post what they're having for lunch, post every little question that they might have that a quick little run to Wikipedia or Google could fix, you know, those kind of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know, it's just absolutely absurd. I want to uninstall that thing, honestly, but I have too much of a connection to it in terms of how it's connected to us for news, but...
Yeah.
I'd hate to say that's the worst pick of the week, but, you know.
It gets worse.
It gets worse. It gets worse.
So I'm not known for my tech stories, but When I heard this one, I said this is going to be my pick of the week, because people need to know about this because they need to opt out of it. But my almost anti-pick of the week is Amazon Sidewalk. It's a new program that you are going to need to opt out of before June 8th. And what it's doing is they have decided to try to use Amazon Echoes and Ring doorbells, all of the devices, to create a mesh network so that other people that don't have internet will be able to use their Amazon devices from a low low speed network that you are providing. Isn't that nice? Yeah, you get to provide it from your internet. And data caps apply. He sure does. So I guess you can send Jeff a check or a bill or something. But yeah, you probably want to opt out of this. As soon as I heard about it, I was like, hey, we're either unplugging these damn things right now or we're opting out, because this is where I draw the line.
Yeah, and you know, I remember in the early 2000s when Wi-Fi became widespread, that one of the things people did until they knew the security risks, they would leave their Wi-Fi networks open as kind of a good neighbor kind of thing. Say someone's walking by, they need Wi-Fi, let them use it. But we quickly learned that you don't want to do that for various security reasons. And Amazon does say that they have they released through what they're calling a privacy white paper how they're protecting customer information with this, but it doesn't change the fact that this is still using your internet connection that you are paying for, whether it be through someone like Comcast or Verizon or Spectrum in the US. You are still paying for that access, and you are effectively renting a portion of that out to whoever is passing by.
Yeah, which, you know what? Maybe that is a good idea. Maybe that's a good thing. But if it is such a good thing, then we should probably pay for that through our taxes and do it collectively, not through Jeff Bezos. But that's just my opinion. I mean, and when you talk about like security, that is legitimate. Yeah, they made a statement, but they also have made statements before about, you know, our devices, what they're listening to and what they're not. And we've seen...
Remember the story issues. About the tech news story where the Amazon Alexa would start reciting locations and addresses of the nearest funeral parlors?
Yeah. I mean, that, and remember when someone's like whole conversation, I mean, they were talking about flooring or whatever, but that got sent to someone else at work. And so, I mean, there are some legitimate concerns here.
Yeah.
Not to mention, you know, yeah, this is for right now, but if they get this up and running, who's to say they can't turn it up so that now it was only supposed to be to, you know, be able to get Amazon devices hooked up and going, but who's to say they can't turn that up, you know, a month from now and now other people can shop now and they can, you know, they're using more of your, I don't know. It rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah, so it says Sidewalk is designed to be a shared network to help customer devices work better together, both at home and beyond the front door. Operated by Amazon with no charge, Sidewalk helps to simplify new device setups, extends the working range of low bandwidth devices, and helps devices stay online, even if they're outside of the range of the user's home Wi-Fi. It's going to use someone else's Wi-Fi to help out with that. A list of devices includes the Ring floodlight cam, the Ring spotlight cam, the Ring spotlight cam mount, the Echo third generation and newer, Echo Dot, Echo Dot for kids. The Echo Dot with clock, the Echo Plus, the Echo Show, the Echo Spot, the Echo Studio, the Echo Input, and Echo Flex. Aye, aye, aye. I didn't know that there were that many Amazon Echo devices.
Wow.
Customers with a sidewalk gateway are able to contribute a small portion of their internet bandwidth, which is pooled together to create a network that benefits all sidewalk-enabled devices in a community. So it's not, you know, just, you know, run out and access someone's Wi-Fi. It's going to be for these Amazon devices in particular. But you ask the question, do you want other people's device traffic going down your pipes, right?
Yeah.
And we just need to underscore that it's not, you know, just a general internet connection, but it is for these Internet of Things Amazon devices. And they say this can include experiences ranging from finding pets or valuables that may be lost to improving reliabilities for devices like leak sensors or smart lighting to diagnostics for appliances and power tools. And the example they give is that a door lock in a poor coverage zone can receive connectivity from a participating neighbor's gateway.
Yeah, in theory.
It sounds good.
Right. But I just don't think that a multi-billion dollar company that pays zero in taxes should rely on its customers' goodwill
to make everyone's devices work. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that just seems backwards to me.
Oh, but it's going to be encrypted, they say.
Oh, I'm sure it will.
Yeah. let's see. Now, they don't say anything about data minimization, or they do, about actual bandwidth. But yeah, I mean, I understand the concern in this, and you know, this is just another reason that I will never have an Amazon Alexa type device. It's because
we
knew they were very pervasive back in the day, and they're just getting more pervasive.
Yeah, she's really turning into a stage 5 clinger, ain't she?
I don't know what that means, but all right.
Yeah.
Remember that product they unveiled that allows you to take a picture and it evaluates your body image? Yeah. Yikes.
Yeah, the self-esteem destroyer. Yeah.
Well, let's not destroy self-esteem. Let's move on to some achievements now. Starting off, we have Sigma Gamma with 99 defense on June 2nd. Dexian with 99 mining on June 1st. Free Keski with 99 defense on June 1st. Luke Totodile got 120 archaeology. Mesgram got 99 runecrafting. Miss Alaska got 120 archaeology. Surge Aurora got 99 construction on June 1st. Moving on to the 31st, we have Psyoasis with 120 constitution and WM Penguin with 99 cooking. Then on the 30th, we have Robosaur Rex with 120 attack, Twisted Soul with 99 herb lore, and WM Penguin with 99 construction and 99 fishing on May 30th.
Right, and moving on to the 29th, we have Shamrock Soup with 99 fishing. Then we have WM Penguin with 99 agility and 99 smithing. Then we have Dr. Bruce with 120 crafting on the 28th. We have Shamrock Soup with 99 runecrafting on the 28th. We have WM Penguin with 99 magic, crafting, and prayer all on the 28th. We have Captain Metaphor with 120 archaeology on the 27th. We have WM Penguin with 99 fletching and 99 fire making on the 27th. Very nice, everybody.
Nicely done, everyone. Nicely done. Good amount of achievements, and I see we are back at the pre-double XP amount, so that makes me happy. Everybody's doing their own thing, going down the act track, getting ready for mobile, and so on and so forth.
Settling in.
Yeah. And if you want to help us out with update, we do have a help wanted form. You can fill out at update.rsbnb.com/help. You can fill that out and tell us if you want to help with podcast guest hosting, informer article writing, maybe some graphics work, so on and so forth. Just fill that out. We can ask what kind of player you are, what your RuneScape name is, and, of course, where we can contact you. You can find that at update.rsbnb.com/help. All right. What have you been up to this week?
A few skill and kills. Still, you know, just trucking along archaeology. I just like, that's kind of like my zen time, just to follow the little sprite around. And but that's all I'm really doing right now. Collecting, you know, all my bonus XP, throwing it into farming.
Nice.
That'll be my last, like, legit 120 I'll need to get.
Woo!
Yeah, moving along. But that's really been about it. Like I said, I didn't realize how much I played on mobile until it was gone. And so that's been another reason I haven't probably played as much as normal this week. But still managing to do some yak tracking.
Wonderful. Wonderful. As for me, I've been doing woodcutting in the meantime after Double XP ended. And then, of course, yak track as well. I actually enjoy the smithing tasks, believe it or not, in terms of, you know, smithing the armor and making it into burial and the like. That's actually good fun. I enjoy that. But aside from that, I've also been working on the player-owned farm breeding log. Yes, I never got around to that because I had 99 and then 120 farming at the time. The only thing I have left to do at the manor farm are the spiders, the shiny sheep, and the shiny yak. Everything else is done. Yeah.
Yeah, you're cruising.
Yeah. Dinosaurs are a different beast entirely on that, so that's something I'm working towards. Because rather than buying the breeding pairs, I make my own. You know, I'll start breeding until I get a 2-trait one, then I'll add the traits to those that makes them breed with more traits, then I get a 3-trait male and female, roll the traits for shinies, and that's how I do it.
It's got to take like a really long time.
Oh, it does. But that's about it. I don't think there's much else to say. We'll be back next week with the Battle of the Monolith Part 3, as that starts to heat up and we progress going forward. On that, look for the monthly bit arriving on Saturday or Sunday on Patreon at patreon.com/rsbnb. It's going to be a fun one about the rise and fall of the Java client. And in the meantime, you can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, Pocket Cast, Stitcher, and even on YouTube at youtube.com/rsbnb. Give us a like and subscribe there. And with that being said, we'll see you next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. Take care, everyone.
See ya.